As people in Nova Scotia begin to enjoy summer and the weather, the warmer temperatures, heat, and humidity can actually increase tick activity within the Nova Scotia area. Today, we speak with Amalil Nambut, a PhD candidate here at Dalhousie University in the Department of Biology, who discusses preventive measures, the diseases ticks carry, their lifespan, how they feed, their many different types, and the call to action after being bitten by one. Amalil Nambut has also published many scholarly articles and discusses her most recent thesis, Biotic and Abiotic Factors Influencing Survival of Exodus Scapular Ticks in Nova Scotia, during this interview.
My name is Amal El Nambut. I'm a PhD candidate here at Dalhousie University at the Department of Biology. Currently, I'm working on my thesis that is titled Biotic and Abiotic Factors Influencing Survival of Exodus Scapularis Ticks in Nova Scotia. So ticks are, they belong to the arthropod and they belong to the mite superorder. They're parasitic, they're considered ectoparasites. Ectoparasites means like they are external to the body, they're not internal. Even though they burrow their head in the skin and so on, they're considered ectoparasites. They vary from 3 to 5 centimeters in length, depending on the sex, the species, how full they are, where in the feeding stage they are, and so on.
And why are they so common in Nova Scotia?
Nova Scotia has a perfect climate for them. The climate here is very suitable for tick populations. They love humid places. And here we have a lot of humidity. So basically they thrive in areas that have shrubs, you know, wooded area where there's trees, shades mostly. Like wherever you find high humidity, it's a very suitable environment for them.
And what are the methods of prevention? How do we avoid ticks in general?
So for avoiding ticks, there are several things you can do. If it's around your house, basically just to keep your grass short, not very tall. Another way is by, like, say if you have around your house a lot of shrubs and a lot of trees and things like that, maybe make a barrier, like few stones just that divide your lawn from the forest, for example. For you, when you go walking into forests and areas with ticks, well, first advice is don't go there. Second, second is probably wear light colored clothing that you can see, because you can see the tick right away on you if you do that. For example, you can tuck your pants inside your socks so they don't find a way to get to you, to your skin right away, and do your daily tick check for you, your kids, your pets.
And what kind of diseases do ticks carry, and how do they get these diseases?
Ticks carry a lot of diseases. The most common one, if it's a dog tick, for example, is Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. For deer ticks, we have Lyme disease, which is the most known. We have anaplasmosis, babesiosis. There are a lot of diseases they can carry. If we want to focus mostly, say, for example, on Lyme disease, well, first of all, if we want to go through the life cycle, they have 3 different stages. So it goes from egg to larvae to nymph to adult. And when they are larvae, they feed on birds and small mammals like rats, mice, white-footed mice mostly. And they get the bacteria that causes Lyme disease from there. So the bacteria does not go through the egg. Like you can't have an egg that is infected and then it goes to the larvae. The larvae acquires the bacteria from feeding. And then it moves with it from stage to stage. So basically, once it moves from larvae to nymph, it will still have the bacteria. And to adult, the same thing. And every time they feed, they suck the blood, they filter it, and they put it back into the body. And this is how the bacteria gets into your body.
And how do ticks get into our skin, exactly?
They don't get under the skin. They burrow their head in the skin. The thing is, once they get to you or to your pet, or let's say like they come on you somehow, first of all, they don't jump, they don't fly, they have to latch on you. once they get to your skin, they start crawling up usually to find a place that is moist mostly and very easy to pierce through. So the skin has to be very thin. Mostly like places like underarms, groins areas, like in here, so for example. They sit there for a bit, then they pierce through the skin. And most of the time you don't feel it because they inject some kind of an anesthetic that, you know, even if they're going through your skin, you can't feel it. And they start feeding. So depending on their life stage, they feed. If it's a larvae, which is the first stage, it usually feeds for 3 days. For example, nymph, that is the second stage, 4 to 5 days. Adults stay on you for about 7 to 10 days feeding. Scary.
Yeah. How is the damage done? So like, let's say a tick burrs its head, do I remove it and go to the ER right away? Or how long until I get to, let's say, it transfers some kind of disease to me? What is the call to action once I see that?
So once you see it, the first recommendation is that you remove it. There are special kits you can carry with you, and people who go hiking a lot and go into forests and things like that, they can buy those special kits. They have specific tweezers that are very thin, that the head of the tweezers comes very, very close to the end, like where the tick is burrowing its head. Usually you have to place the tweezers on it with even pressure, pull it upwards. Not right or left, usually just upwards. And this is how you get it out. You clean the area really well with rubbing alcohol, and you clean your hands as well. And I would just go to the doctor whenever you can and get a course of antibiotics. Because if you don't know how long the tick has been attached to you, it's risky. Usually people know how long it's been attached from the way it changes colors. Like it goes from dark red, for example, to gray or brownish. And that's when it's kind of starting to get engorged. That means it's been there at least for 36 hours.
And the diseases that the ticks give people, are they curable, most of them, or how serious can they be?
Well, if they're not cured, they're very serious and they're fatal. But if you like get it treated, you should be okay. Usually Lyme disease is cured within the first stages with a course or two of antibiotics. There are some other diseases, or like sometimes all ticks, not just one specific kind of ticks, like deer ticks, might cause tick paralysis, is what it's called. It's very rare, but you know, because the tick gets attached on the body for quite some time, then it releases some kind of a neurotoxin that might affect your nervous system, and this is when it gets hard. It's very rare that tick paralysis happen, but it does, because the tick stays there for a long time.
And tick paralysis, is it temporary or is it permanent damage?
Usually when you remove the tick within a couple hours, you should start feeling a bit better, but it might go for quite some time. The area gets a bit numb, tingling. The long-term effects of tick bites are usually muscle pain, joint pain, fatigue, headaches, mental fog, difficulty with memory or finding different words like that you're looking for, sleeplessness, things like that.
And how do we decrease the tick population in Nova Scotia?
That's what I'm working on as my project.
Oh.
Where other than the methods of prevention that I told you, it's hard. Now we're working on a specific type of formulation that we can apply probably during the fall on people's lawn. And then, you know, we're hoping that it will reduce the tick numbers in the coming spring, because ticks are mostly active in spring and fall.
So do they hibernate through the winter?
They go through a stage called diapause or quiescence, which is like, you know, they do go dormant, like not dormant. It is called diapause. It's a specific term that people use for these things. Whenever they reach a certain temperature, they wake up again.
Okay. So the winter doesn't eradicate them. Okay.
Not much, because they do usually burrow under leaf litter, and under leaf litter, it doesn't get like... to minus 20 or minus 30 or whatever, you know.
So doesn't regular bug spray for like roaches, that doesn't work on them?
What works probably sprays that have DEET in it.
What's DEET?
DEET is a specific chemical that is like it's a repellent. That's what they use for mosquitoes and you know, this off spray and things like that. It's mostly containing DEET. That's what is most effective as far as I know on them. There are a lot of tick sprays now. There are a lot of people working on several projects, several researches containing like natural products, and some people say it's effective, but I've never tried any of them.
And you said you're doing your research on how to prevent ticks. How are you doing so far?
So it's not mostly on how to prevent ticks. We figured out a way. My research is mostly on overwintering ticks. Like I've been putting some experiments at the Harrison Lewis Center in Port Jolie, Nova Scotia. I've been putting ticks out there. Like I collect ticks, put them in specific microcosm tubes, and put them there in the fall and record the temperature and their the humidity that's in that specific site for a whole 3 months. And then back in March, I go collect these ticks and see if they're alive or dead, and see what's the percent, what's the percentage of ticks that survive the winter. And then after that, we go take them to the lab, test them to see whether they have the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. And then we can say, like, does the bacteria usually, is there a correlation between the bacteria presence and the survival of these ticks? Like, does it make them more resistant to cold if the winter is like very, very harsh in a specific year and they're infected? Do they survive better?
Do they?
Usually they do. This is what I'm finding right now. And this is all based on a research done in Switzerland by Herman. They found that if ticks, and of course the ticks that are in Europe, it's not the Ixodes scapularis deer ticks that is here, but it's a very similar species that live in that area that causes the same thing. They found that if ticks are infected, it makes them survive harsher environments and survive better overall. So that's what made me start this project, and this is what we're looking for. If ticks are infected, is there a correlation between this infection and their survivability during the winter? Does temperature have anything to do with this? So basically we're working on overwintering temperature and things, and usually we have a paper that is right now in process for publishing. It talks about a specific kind of leaf litter, because we tested several types of leaf litter, most leaf litters that are known for Nova Scotia. Like if you find them in that area, or in that area that is mostly known for this type of trees, for example, do they survive better? And because we noticed that they are present in areas more than others. So we started testing the leaf litter in these areas, because usually leaves fall, and in the fall, ticks burrow underneath the leaf litter so they can overwinter, and then they come out in the spring. During the 3 years, we've been noticing that a certain leaf litter makes them not survive as well as the others. And this is how we came across finding that natural product that will probably help people keep ticks away from their homes and things like that.
So what is the certain leaf litter? Is it a specific tree, specific shrub?
It is a specific tree. It's a balsam fir tree, the Christmas tree. Usually, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that right now or not, but this is. it's in process right now.
The
publication.
So tell us places in Halifax that we should just avoid that have ticks or.
See, I'm not sure about these because I haven't been everywhere to do that. I've been collecting ticks for my experiments, for example, in the Burnside area. In Burnside, there's lots of Ixodes scapularis ticks, which is known as deer ticks. South Shore has a lot of ticks, and this is where I've been doing my 3 years research on overwintering. So I collect them from there, from Thomas Riddell Park, and then I put them at the Harrison Lewis Center, which is a discovery center for, like, it has a lab and stuff, and we use it to aid in our research and experiments.
This is a very specific field. I'm curious, what got you interested in this?
Actually, I did my master's in at Mount Allison University's New Brunswick, and my research was on dog ticks originally, because there's lots of it here in Nova Scotia, and you know, like, you find it everywhere, even though it's not known to cause any serious disease. And then suddenly an opportunity came up, and oh, I can do my PhD, why not? So this is what I was interested in the topic from the beginning, and this is how I pursued my research.
And are dog ticks harmful to us? When we let our dog in the house and they're carrying ticks, does that hurt us?
They do cause specific diseases. Like, dog ticks might cause Rocky Mountain spotted fever, but it's not, like, as far as I know, they're not fatal or they're not that serious, you know. For quite some time, we had contacted most of the vet clinics in Nova Scotia, and they started sending us ticks that are found on the pets when people bring them in, and in return we would tell them or identify the ticks for them. Is it a dog tick or a deer tick? So they know, like, should I put a course of antibiotics if it's, you know, if it's a deer tick, why not? If it's a dog tick, then you don't need to.
Oh, so different types of ticks require different types of medication?
Yes, of course. Well, it depends on the disease.
But then how will we know which tick we get?
From the way it looks, usually dog ticks are much bigger than deer ticks, and the color is different. Like, there's a pattern on their body that is not found on deer ticks.
Can you explain?
I can show you a couple pictures if you want.
We'll do that
later.
And what are the most common types of ticks here in Nova Scotia?
There's a lot of dog ticks, but in the fall and in the spring, there's a lot of deer ticks in certain places. I haven't discovered all the places yet, but there is quite a few. And they're increasing. Like, I find the population from year to year, deer ticks are on the increase. And Lyme disease is on the increase.
Do you know what are some of the factors that are causing their increase?
More suitable climate probably is one of them. And they becoming more harsh probably to live in these environments.
So they're adapting better.
Working on that,
yeah. It was something that surprised you, like, as you were doing your research.
Something probably that people should know about is the bull's eye rash. Like, so, for example, so usually when a tick or deer tick bites a person or a human, probably about 15-20% of the cases, it causes a bull's eye rash. Like, you can see. I can show you pictures too. People probably don't notice that they got bitten by a tick unless they see something like this. But that doesn't mean that if you don't have it, you don't get bit. You know what I mean? Because it only shows in 20% of the people that get bit.
So do ticks die after they get engorged in our skin?
So usually after they're feeding, they become engorged and they fall off the body. After falling off, they stay somewhere in the leaf litter, they lay their eggs, and after laying the eggs, they die.
So what's a tick's lifespan?
2 to 3 years? But you don't want to know how many eggs they lay.
How many eggs do they lay?
Each one at least 2,000.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. Now, not all of them, like, come to life, but most of them do, so... That's why it's on the population is on the increase.
That was Dalhousie University PhD candidate Emmeline Naboot, and this is Sarah Gouda CKDU.